So this is the essence of chapter one in the book, okay? Seeing the benefits of bodhicitta. Now we're going to get into the actual teaching that we're doing in these 4 days, which is on chapter two. So let's look at the text. Okay. So chapter two is called the disclosure of wrongdoing. Okay, let me give just a little introduction to this chapter. Before we can generate this loving, compassionate attitude of bodhicitta, we have to learn to, we have to do two things. We have to purify our negative karma, and we have to create a great deal of merit or positive potential. Okay? So this chapter, the disclosure of wrongdoing, is really focused on that, on helping us to disclose the mistakes that we've made, just like the prisoners that I was talking about. You know, it's teaching us to be very, very honest. Yeah. So it's helping us to purify, and it's also, this chapter is going to teach us how to create merit. So remember, Shantideva, as he's writing this, it's written in the first person. So he's just telling us what he thinks and how he practices. And, you know, sometimes in our mind we think, well, what does a bodhisattva think anyway? What are their minds like anyway? Well, when we read this text, he's telling us, okay, we're getting a first-person view of what it's like. So he starts out, and he says, in order to adopt that jewel of the mind, I make offerings to the Tathagatas, to the stainless jewel of the sublime Dharma, and to the children of the Buddhas, who are oceans of excellent qualities. Okay? So, when he says, in order to adopt that jewel of the mind, the jewel of the mind refers to the bodhicitta. Okay? So in order to adopt it, then we have to create positive potential or merit. So we do that by making offerings. So he makes offerings to the Tathagatas, in other words, to the Buddhas, to the stainless jewel of the sublime Dharma, and to the children of the Buddhas, the bodhisattvas, who are the oceans of excellent qualities. So let's pause for a minute here and talk about the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Because what are they? Yeah? If we're Buddhists, or even if we're thinking of Buddhism, you know, we should know what the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha are. They're called the three jewels, and we take refuge in them. We go to them for our spiritual guidance. So the Dharma is the real refuge. Yeah? Because the Dharma refers to the path to liberation and all the cessations of suffering and the cessations of the causes of suffering. Okay, that's what the jewel of the Dharma refers to. So when we actualize the Dharma in our own heart, that is the real protection. That is actual security. Okay? Because when we've actualized the path to enlightenment in our heart, when we've ceased all suffering and the causes of suffering, then we have actual security, we have actual happiness and joy. Okay? So that Dharma, when we actualize it in our own heart, is our real refuge. The Buddha, which is called here the Tathagata, the one gone to the Tathagata, the translation is the one gone to thusness, or the one thus gone. It means the one who perceives the nature of reality. Okay? So the Buddha is the one who taught the Dharma. Okay? The Buddha did not invent the Dharma. Okay, the Buddha did not create us. The Buddha did not create the path to enlightenment. But the Buddha learned how things operate. What are the causes of suffering? What are the causes of happiness? He created all the causes of happiness in his own mind. And then, as a fully enlightened being, his whole purpose was out of compassion to teach us how to create the causes of suffering and abandon the causes of misery. Okay? So the Buddha is the one who taught the Dharma, and he taught it out of his own experience. Okay? So everything that we learn about in the Buddha's teachings is something that somebody has experienced. It's not abstract philosophy, okay? But it's actually enlightened beings telling us what it's like to be an enlightened being from their own experience. So we can really trust the Dharma, the teachings that the Buddha has taught, because they're coming up from experience. And then the Buddha not only taught them, okay, but his disciples actualized those teachings. And so for 2,500 years, because the Buddha lived in the 6th century B.C., for 2,500 years, there's been realized practitioners who have actualized the Dharma that the Buddha taught. Those realized practitioners and the ones who have generated the aspiration for enlightenment, the ones who have generated the bodhicitta, those are called bodhisattvas. Okay? And so when it talks about the children of the Buddha or the children of the conqueror, it's referring to those bodhisattvas. And the bodhisattvas have such intense love and compassion for us that if they could give up their own enlightenment and stay in the cycle of existence that we're stuck in, if it would be beneficial for them to give up their own enlightenment and do that, they would be happy to do that. That's how much love and compassion they have for the rest of us sentient beings. Okay? Bodhisattvas, in fact, don't give up their enlightenment and stay in cyclic existence, because they see that they can be of greater benefit to others when they become fully enlightened Buddhists. So Kuan Yin, for example, yeah, has actually gone on to become a Buddha, and so has Manjushri and Samantabhadra. Okay, they've all become Buddhas, but they appear in that form of a bodhisattva, demonstrating that incredible compassion that says, I'm willing to even give up my own enlightenment if that would be of greater benefit to others. Okay. Now they see that it's actually of greater benefit to others if they become Buddhists, so they complete the path, because then they have more abilities to help us. Okay. But they're so astounding because they're willing to give up any kind of self-happiness, whether it's worldly or spiritual, by the power of their compassion. Okay? And so, in this verse, it's saying that we make offerings to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the Bodhisattvas. Okay? And why do we make offerings? Okay? If you're a Buddha, do you need somebody to offer you flowers? Okay? You know, now, if you're a woman who wants to make sure that your boyfriend loves you, or if you're a guy wanting to show your girlfriend that you love her, you get her flowers. Okay. Our ego needs to get flowers, doesn't it? And our ego needs to give flowers. But when we're offering to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, okay, does the Buddha need flowers? Does the Buddha need oranges and apples to be happy? Okay. Does the Buddha need incense or lights? I mean, if you're a fully enlightened being, you are in a realm of bliss that, you know, forget about apples and oranges, you know. They're not doing much for you. Even chocolate, yeah. So, but we make offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha because it's important for us to learn how to give. Yeah, one of the chief qualities of a bodhisattva that we aspire to develop is generosity. Actually, one of the chief qualities of a kind human being is generosity. Isn't it? This whole world functions by people being generous. So we make offerings in order to increase our generosity and to train our mind to take delight in being generous. And by being generous to others, we create a lot of merit or positive potential that enriches our own mind, and it makes it easier for us to gain spiritual realizations. In addition, merit or positive potential, it's good karma, so it creates the cause for us to have happiness in this life and in future lives. Okay. So today we had food to eat. Okay. Now we may have taken all the food we ate for granted. Like, because there's food every day, isn't there? You just go to the store and you buy food. Well, we happen to be incredibly fortunate here in Singapore. There's so much food. There are places on this planet where there is no food. Okay, you go to Darfur in Africa right now. You know, there's no food. Yeah, there's no water. There are people on this planet who are starving. And we just go to the market and buy food. And we have so much access to food that we sometimes even throw it away. Isn't that incredible? You know, we just throw away food, and then there's people on the same planet, yeah, who don't have enough to eat. And why is it, okay, that we have food and other people don't? Well, in a worldly way, part of it has to do with the political system. Part of it has to do with whether there's war or whether there's peace in the country. Part of it has to do with the climate, whether there's a drought, okay? So though that there are certain causes that are going around now, but that happen now. But why are we born here instead of being born in Darfur? Okay, why? Why were we born in a place where there's food aplenty and not where there's a drought and warfare? Okay. That happened because of our good karma from previous lives. Okay. And we had food today because we were generous, sharing food, sharing other things with other people in the past. So what we receive today is a product of the causes that we created in the past. So receiving things is a result of generosity, of giving. Okay? There's a one way to express the law of karma is what goes around comes around. Okay? So what you give out into the universe comes around to you. When we are generous, our own fortune increases. When we are cruel, other people become mean to us. Okay? So karma is, you know, it doesn't always ripen in the lifetime we create it in, but we do experience the result of the actions that we created. And in particular here, you know, we are able to eat today because we were generous. So we made offerings to either sentient beings in the past, or maybe we made offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha in the past. And as a result, we have food to eat today. Okay? So when we understand karma and we can look at our own lives and see the fortune that we have now and know the kind of causes we created in the past to have the fortune that we have now, then that gives us a lot of inspiration to keep creating all those kinds of causes in the future. Okay? So instead of just saying, oh, I created some good karma in the past, now I'm reaping the benefit of it, isn't this jolly? Then really using our resources, again, to share, to create more merit, because it enriches our mind, and it makes not only this life better, but future lives better, and it enables us to gain Dharma realizations. But also, when we're generous, it creates happiness in the world. It creates beauty in the world. Like I was saying, we're here in this hall tonight due to the generosity of all the people who made donations so that it could be built. Okay? So those people were making offerings, you know, to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha to build a place where we could make more offerings and have more teachings. Okay, so what do we offer? Okay, the chapter continues. It says, as many flowers, fruits, and medicinal herbs as there are, and as many jewels as there are in the world, and clear and pleasant waters, jeweled mountains, forested regions, and other delightful and solitary places, vines shining with the ornaments of lovely flowers, and trees with branches bowed with delicious fruit. Okay, so those are just two of the verses. It's going to go on here. Okay, I want to tell you how to listen to it as I'm reading this and as you read along with me. When we're reading this, okay, imagine all of these things and imagine that you're offering them to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Okay? So don't read this like a textbook. We're not studying what Shantideva did. Oh, he did this and this and this. But actually, he's offering these things himself, and by it being written in the first person, and our saying, I offer this and I offer that, then in our own heart, in our own mind, let's imagine all these things and offer them. Okay. Now you might say, well, what's the use of imagining all these things? Okay. Shouldn't I make actual offerings? Well, yes, it is good to make actual offerings. You know, and people do offer flowers and lights and incense and fruit and everything. Okay, they make offerings to build the building. They make offerings to bring teachers here. Okay, so we do make actual offerings. But it's also important to imagine offerings because there's a few reasons for imagining offerings. One is, okay, when we imagine beautiful things, our mind feels happy. Okay? When we imagine beautiful things and then we give them away to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, for whom we have the utmost love and respect, then our heart feels even happier. Okay? Then our mind really takes delight in giving, takes delight in being generous. It creates an incredibly happy state in our own mind. Okay? Because think about it. Yeah? If we imagine, if you imagine dirty, yucky places, yeah? Then your mind feels a little bit discouraged, doesn't it? If I say, think of a dirty, filthy place with rats crawling around, you know, you go, bleh. Yeah. So that affects your mood. If I say, think of flowers and fruits and medicinal herbs and jewels, okay, and clear and pleasant waters and jeweled mountains and forests and flowers and trees and flowers and vines and parks and lakes and oceans and clear water and things like this. Doesn't your mind feel a lot happier just even thinking about those things? Yeah. Maybe for Singaporeans, instead of talking about natural places, maybe I should say, imagine piles of money. Oh, then everybody feels so happy. Oh, now, see, all the Singaporeans, now you're very happy. Okay. Piles of money and piles and more piles and piles of gold and piles of jewel and piles of stock and piles of bonds. Okay, and more piles of money of all the currency in the world. Okay, infinite piles. And do you have ATM machines here? Is that what you call them? Are they called ATM machines? Okay, and you have piles of ATM machines and credit cards galore and checkbooks that are infinite in how many checks you can write. And credit cards with no limit, okay? And millions of orchard roads. The world is paved with orchard roads. And you can go in and get anything you want, and even 10 things of anything you want. Got it now? Okay? Now, imagine offering all of that to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Okay, and offering it with a feeling of happiness because you love the Buddha, you love the Dharma, you love the Bodhisattvas and the Arhat. You want all sentient beings to be happy, and you know that if you offer all these piles of money and jewels and orchard roads to them, that they will use it to benefit all other living beings because they have absolutely no attachment to it. Okay? So we had to rewrite Shantideva so that you got the idea. But let's go back to what Shantideva is saying. Okay? And maybe you'll learn to appreciate nature a little bit too as we're reading this. Because where I live at Shravasti Abbey, you know, we have 240 acres of land, so I really love nature. Okay, so I like these verses very much. So we'll read a few more of the verses and really imagine offering them as we do. Okay, fragrances and incense, wish-fulfilling trees, jeweled trees, lakes adorned with lotuses, enchanting calls of wild geese in the worlds of gods and other celestials. Uncultivated crops, planted crops, and other things that ornament the venerable ones. All these that are unknown and that extend throughout space. Okay, so we're offering even things that don't belong to us. And they don't need to belong to us for us to offer them because we're offering the beauty, okay? And it's just, it makes our minds so happy to offer beauty, to think of beauty, okay? I bring to mind an offer to the foremost of sages together with their children, okay? So the foremost of sages to all of the Buddhas and their children, the Bodhisattvas, may those worthy of our precious gifts, the greatly merciful ones, compassionate towards me, accept these from me. So we're asking the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, please accept my offerings. You know, I've imagined these beautiful things. I'm offering them with a mind of faith. You know, please accept my offerings. And when you offer like this, you imagine the Buddha, okay? And you imagine all the Bodhisattvas, okay? In fact, the whole sky is filled with holy beings, and the whole sky is filled with all the offerings. and you present it to them. And whenever you offer someone something, you are making a karmic connection with them. Okay? Even we offer things to human beings, we're making a connection with them. When we offer to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we're making a connection with them. Okay? The connection with the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is the most important connection that we make in our lives. Okay? Because people, human beings, they come and they go. The Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, if we have them in this life and in next life and the life after that, then they will lead us out of the misery of cyclic existence and to enlightenment. Okay? So making a strong connection with the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is extremely important. Okay? There's one Chinese word for connection, for karmic connection. What is it? People have taught me before, but I keep forgetting it. You know? Isn't there one Chinese word? People always tell me, in Taiwan especially, they talk about it. When you make a connection with somebody, Yuan, that's it, Yuan, yeah. That connection, okay? So you're making that karmic connection. So when we make offerings to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, we're making that very strong connection with them. That's an extremely important connection for us to make. Okay? Because when we die, if we remember that connection with the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, then we can die and our mind will be completely peaceful. We'll have a good rebirth. Okay? We'll be able to keep practicing in the future. So it's a very, very important connection.